And welcome back to the Sundance Reel. I'm Leslie Thatcher, along with my co-host, Barbara Bretz. Well, filmmaker Sterling Harjo returns to the Sundance Film Festival for the fourth time, this with his first feature-length documentary. This may be the last time. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about This May Be the Last Time. It's part of the documentary premieres.
Yeah, it's my – so like you said, it's my first documentary. I have had two fictional feature films that I brought here and also a short film that I wrote and directed. I did a documentary. It's a documentary that I always wanted to do. It's about this very rare style of singing that the tribes that I come from do. They still do it today. And it's a style of singing that I never knew where it come from. Very distinctive. I knew that it was rare. And I just sort of started basically uncovering this story of the history of these songs. And
give us a little bit more background, though. I mean, you say you come from tribes. What?
I'm a Muscogee, Creek, and Seminole from Oklahoma. So originally, my tribes were in the southeast. And both of those tribes speak the same language, which is Muscogee. We were in Florida, Alabama, Georgia, until we were forcibly removed by the U.S. government to Oklahoma, which is kind of famously known as the Trail of Tears. These songs, we grew up with stories about how our people sang these songs along the Trail of Tears as like encouragement songs. And then you look at the history of it. I met a man named Hugh Foley, who's a professor at RSU, Rogers State University in Oklahoma. And he really uncovered this backstory to me that where Scottish missionaries came to the southeast to, you know, basically spread Christianity. And what happened is there was this sort of commingling of cultures between the Scottish missionaries, black slaves, and Muscogee Creek and Seminole people. And out of that, this style of singing sort of, they all came together, and it sort of, the culture, it was sort of like I guess like a cultural stew where this all just sort of mixed together. And out of that, all of these three groups sort of have this similar style of singing. The Muscogee Creek hymns, you know, they sound like slave spirituals. You can also hear the Irish or the Scottish influence in them, but you can also hear the native traditional ceremonial song, influence in them as well. So it's a very unique style of singing that, no one knows about, basically. The story also interweaves with the story of my grandfather, who went missing in 1962. He wrecked his car off of a bridge outside of the town of Sasakwa. And they found his car, but they couldn't find his body. So the whole Indian community came together, and they searched for his body. And hearing the story over and over as a child, they always told me that they sang these songs as they searched for him. So, you know, it's really a story about songs and how these songs are used in the community and how they're used as encouragement, the history of them, but also the people that still try to keep them alive today.
Sterling, I wanted to ask you, the picture that you use for your poster and for the publicity is really haunting. Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's a photo of my grandfather. And, you know, in the film, you see the full photo, which is even more haunting, I think. It's this photo of him and on the poster, you can't see it, but you can't see his face. It's really just blacked out. And there's these really sort of haunting trees behind him. On the ground, which you don't see on the poster, there's a white dog jumping in the air, and he's just standing there, and it looks almost like, Death of a Salesman shot or something. This guy in a suit and a hat and maybe a briefcase, and he's just standing there with this old truck and this old car and the woods behind him. And it was just my grandma kept these photos of him, and they were just amazing. It was almost like, you know, they were left because there was going to be a film made about him. I mean, you know, it was 1962. I can't imagine that a lot of people had many photos taken of them, mm-hmm. or at least as many as he had. And so I found so all these photos I used throughout the film and to help really tell his story.
You seem pretty young. Did you know your grandfather?
I did not. I did not know my grandfather. I'm 34. So my dad was like 5 years old whenever this happened. So, but you know, Something that my dad said to me, he said that he was really happy that I made this film because he felt like he got to know his father better, and, you know, which is obviously one of the highest compliments I could get, but it also feels the same for me where I feel like I got to know him a little better because, you know, I never knew him. I just know this event and this story, but telling the story like I did with this film, it becomes so real to where it's not just a story that I hear. You see how it affected people, and it affected people's lives, and it affected people's lives to this day. And part of the story illustrates the Trail of Tears and how we use these songs as well. And I think that's the same thing for that. You know, it's like this, you hear about the Trail of Tears, but if you stop and think about what really happened, it was a very devastating thing where people literally walked for hundreds of miles and, you know, thousands of people died and drowned in the Mississippi River on the way. So it's really a story of survival and how these songs were a part of that survival.
Yeah. So were able to find people that still know the songs. Are we losing the songs?
Yeah, there's not as many people that sing them. You take it for granted, though, when you grow up there. I grew up around them, so it was like, oh, yeah, everyone sings like this. You know, it took me leaving and realizing how rare it was, first of all. And then you just realize that, oh, they're all mostly older people that know these songs. There has been an effort in the last, I would say, 10 years to teach kids these songs. And so there's a bit of a revival of them, I would say. But, you know, with the film and other things, I think that it'll help kind of influence
preserve
people.
It.
Yeah, preserve
Definitely.
It best, for sure.
So are they sung with words, or are they sung in the native language?
Yeah, they're sung in the native language. It's a part of a lining out style of singing where back a long time ago, the Scottish missionaries, you know, sometimes it would be the priests or the whoever's running things that would, they were the ones that could read. And so they would just read a line of the Psalms, basically, and then the congregation would repeat that line in song back to them. That's the style that it comes out of. Now it's just you have a leader who starts off the song, and you'll hear them start the song off, and as soon as the congregation hears that first word, then they come in and they start singing with them. And it's a very mournful style of singing. It's in the Muscogee Creek language. And all of them are very much, you know, encouraging people to not give up and things like that. But they're very mournful. So it's, even though they're hopeful and beautiful songs, they carry sadness within them. And I think it's, you know, some of the songs were written on the Trail of Tears, and I think that's why they are sad, you know.
So after this kind of investigation, did you ever come any closer to finding out what happened to him, your grandpa?
They never found out, you know, they ended up finding the body, but they never found out what happened exactly. You know, there's kind of a few mysterious things that I don't even go to in the film just because there's sort of dead ends. There's no real way to know what was going on. They just know that he wrecked, you know, and there were rumors that he was being chased and things like that. But it's just one of those things that, you know, is kind of lost.
And so your reference to the title here, This May Be the Last Time, and what does that refer to?
So This May Be the Last Time, it's actually, there's a song that we have called Espogeris Omes Kithiskos, which translates to This May Be the Last Time, We Don't Know. And it was my grandma's favorite song. It's, you know, it's a lot of people's favorite song. It's a song that's basically used at funerals and things like that. You know, for me growing up, it always meant like, this may be the last time, you know, that you see your loved one, you know, you should be good to them. And so, but if you look at that song, it comes out of the 1800s, and it's just an example of a song to illustrate kind of how this cross-cultural exchange happened, because you have slave spiritual versions of this song. It was a slave spiritual song. It goes through, you know, gospel and blues adaptations. And then the Staple Singers have a hit with the song in 1961, maybe. I can't remember exactly the dates, in the 60s. They have a hit with it that is called This May Be the Last Time. And then Keith Richard from the Rolling Stones hears the song and adapts it into their famous song, The Last Time.
Wow. Well, Sterling Harjo is the director of This May Be the Last Time. You've got one more screening here in Park City at the Temple tomorrow night, 9 p.m. You'll also be at the Sundance Screening Room on Saturday. Best of luck to you. Fascinating story.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
For 35 years, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, award-winning time-lapse filmmaker Louis Schwartzberg has captured nature that is too fast, too small, too slow, and too vast for the human eye. On January 31st, Park City Institute and Strategic News Service bring Louis and his work to the Black Box Theater. Tickets start at $25. The evening begins at 7:30. Call 655-3114 for further information. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, educating, illuminating, and entertaining since 1998.